This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Book of Murdoch by Lauren D. Estelman, narrated by Richard Ferrone. The author opens with a quote from Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 20. For there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. And now, The Book of Murdoch.
The seventh angel. And the seventh angel sounded, and the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament. And there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. From the Book of Revelation, chapter 11, verses 15 through 19. On the last day of my life, I went into Chicago Joe's Coliseum and ordered a cognac. The place had another name now, but those of us who remembered when the town was put together with canvas and tobacco spit still called it Chicago Joe's, or just the Coliseum, if a lady was listening. It was fitted out more like a private parlor than a saloon, with brocade curtains covering the passage to the separate room where ladies sent their serving girls to have their pails filled with beer. But once you knew the place, you could never look upon mahogany and flocked paper again without getting thirsty. The cuspidors were lined with blue porcelain, and there was a brass call box on the wall at the end of the bar where the staff kept track of orders from upstairs. None of its pointers had been moved off level. It was late morning, with floaters drifting in shafts of sunlight, and all the hostesses were asleep. The bartender was a hairy-fisted relic of Tin Pan days, a veteran of bare-knuckle fights in the camp. Scar tissue blistered his face, and his milky right eye moved independently of its mate, like a cue ball rolling aimlessly on a billiard table at sea.
"What's the occasion? Old Gideon's more your taste."
He poured a swallow of French into a cordial glass and restocked the bottle right away. Evaporation cost dear.
"Today's my birthday." "Which one?"
"The latest."
"Many happy returns."
He didn't try to sound sincere, and I didn't pretend he was. I'd arrested him once for selling cigars without a federal license and shot a generous customer over some official matter I'd forgotten. The man had lived but lost the use of an arm, and after that he'd counted his change more closely. There was no guild for stove-up ranch hands, and consequently no pension. But despite past differences, the bartender was in decent humor when I slung back the drink and ordered another. I fancied there was even a twinkle in his blind eye. For the world had come round. A mail robber I'd chased into a ravine, shattering his mare's cannon, had been released by congressional intervention and was in town looking for redress for the loss of a favorite horse. The common wisdom was he was the better marksman and his reflexes were superior, he being younger. For once, the common wisdom was right. I'd have been better off if I'd deprived him of a brother or a friendly banker, losses more easily forgotten. But pipe dreams ran higher than cognac. I took more time with the second drink, pooling it on my tongue and letting it glide down, scraped a 50-cent piece across the bar, and pocketed every penny that came back.
"And no more than justice it is,"
I heard the bartender mutter as I pushed out through the doors. It was a clear, crisp day, a regular Montana particular. A little flinty, with the wind skidding off the snowcaps on the divide, setting my face tingling, flushed as it was from the good liquor. It wasn't cold enough to cover my best suit of clothes with bare skin or even heavy twill. The sky hurt to look at. It depressed me beyond language. I'd buried my father on just such a day, and as I leaned on the shovel, all I could think of was the splendor he'd missed. How much better to go into the ground with the clouds as black as weeds and weeping. But no day is a good day to die. The Indians were as wrong about that as they were about everything else. The local loafers were all out enjoying the first stretch of pleasant weather since the sodden thaw, smoking, yarning, scratching at the lively activity on their long handles, and admiring the golden brown arc their spittle made as it cleared the hitching rails and splashed into the muddy street. I knew a few of them to talk to, but they all withdrew inside or down the boardwalk as I approached, as nonchalant as spooked antelope. What I had was worse than smallpox. I tightened my left arm against my ribs just to feel the solid lump of the Dean Adams in my armpit. A water wagon passed, spilling its inevitable leakage from staves inadequately treated with pitch. I waited for it to clear, then stepped off the boards to cross Bridge Street. I'd just come out of the shade of the porch when the shock came. I heard the crash and identified it even as I was falling. I hadn't counted on a carbine, or that it would be fired from a second-story window of the Bannock Hotel on the other side of Main. The echo growled in the mountains as I lay in the mud, peddling one leg for a purchase I couldn't find. A crowd gathered around. There's always a crowd to be had, no matter how empty the street at the start. You can't beat blood or free beer for civic interest. I hoped they'd get the dates right on the stone. Hickok had made it only as far as 39, and mine is a competitive spirit. Part 1. Judge Blackthorne's Epistle to the Texicans. Chapter 1. How much do you know about the Bible? It's black, isn't it? Judge Harlan A. Blackthorne and I were seated in the library of the Helena Stockman's Club on Fuller Street, drinking claret with a shard of rye, the judge's own concoction, called Old Thunder's Gavel by the deputies who served him. The only book present was a hollowed-out copy of the Montana Territorial Code containing the pocket model Colt the judge carried in response to the latest threat against his life. The club's reading material stood in presses in the dining room, clearing space for its much larger liquor supply inside oak cabinets in the room where we sat. His expression betrayed a piety that didn't match his satanic features and pitchfork beard. But as usual, he shifted his annoyance to a less revealing subject. "Damn it, deputy. I know your prejudice against displaying the badge of office, but you might pay me the respect of wearing it in my presence." "Yes, Your Honor." I foraged it from a pocket and pinned it on. Blackthorne scowled whenever I addressed him by any title other than judge. Anything else didn't quite fit my mouth, although I could get out a proper sir in times of admiration. And I did admire him, but I'd take a bullet through the star before I'd say it. He was a vain old rooster who never forgot an insult or a compliment. He dismissed the shaft with a gesture that told me how deep I'd struck. I'd just returned from a messy errand in Oregon that had reflected badly on us both, as well as on the federal court, and I hadn't scrupled to remind him I'd been against it from the start. That I was there at all when I should have been on leave while tempers cooled said he needed me for something unpleasant, and I was determined to let him twist until he got to the point. "Do you seriously know nothing of Scripture?" he asked. "I'd expect someone of your frontier stock to have been brought up on sourdough and Jesus." "Dugouts are designed for getting snowed in. There was always plenty of Jesus when the bread ran out. I caught a case of devotion, but it was like measles. You don't get it twice." "Have you no faith apart from your oath to the Union?" "I took it with my hand on a Bible. If I thought it was for more than show, I'd have sworn on my pistol. I've seen good men die and bad men prosper, but never an angel to tip the scale. If I ever was going to, it would have been at Murfreesboro." "Are you an atheist?" "I never liked the ones who claimed to be. They all tried to convert me." "An agnostic?" "I don't know." He frowned as if I'd made an inappropriate jest. The truth was, I didn't know what the word meant. I learned later it was of recent coinage. "But you can sham belief," he said. I'd no idea where the conversation was headed, but already I didn't care for it by half. The judge was a regular attending Presbyterian. Whether that was for community relations or because he thought as much of his immortal soul as he did of the bench wasn't something he shared with those of us who provided him with defendants, and I doubted he was any more forthcoming with his prosecutor or the local leaders he met with formally and at poker. I'd have suspected him of leading up to a dire announcement if I weren't certain he intended to live forever. I said, "I can be an eagle or a duck. Which one depends on the job?" "I haven't said there is a job. You're on inactive duty." "That's true. As long as we're just chewing the fat, where do you stand on Pharaoh's daughter finding baby Moses in the rushes? She spun a good yarn, but that was the last time anyone believed a story like it." "That's blasphemous." "You ought to know. You're using Holy Writ to recruit me for work." "You're hopeless." "If I didn't have hope, I'd be dead in Oregon." The forbidden subject jerked him back onto the rails. He rang for the steward, a bald, leathery Scot in a rusty tailcoat who'd navigated for Lewis and Clark and Noah, and asked him to fetch the big atlas from the dining room. When he returned, lugging a cloth-bound volume the size of a saddle blanket, Blackthorn opened it across the arms of his chair, made heretical marks on one of the watercolor maps with a gravity pen, and sat back. I rose and circled behind to study it over his shoulder. With a sinking heart, I recognized the outline of Texas, my least favorite place after Dakota, which, to be fair to Dakota, had only been the place where I'd almost been slaughtered by the Cheyenne Nation. Even worse, the marks he'd made were in the Panhandle, a spot that existed because the same incessant wind that blew it away daily blew in fresh dirt from Mexico. The Panhandle would disappear when the sand ran out. "I've marked the sites of 5 armed robberies that have taken place in the past 6 months," Blackthorn said. "2 banks, an overland stage, 2 trains. The banks aren't our concern, but mail was stolen from the overland and one of the trains, and that is." "What's the matter with the federal court in Austin?" "Its deputy marshals are spread thin over a jurisdiction the size of France. The Texas Rangers, who normally can be depended upon to fill the gap, are busy patrolling the border of Mexico for banditos. Governor Ireland has asked us for our help after Isaac Parker in Arkansas turned him down for obvious reasons." Parker was the only U.S. jurist who was more put upon than Blackthorn, with 74,000 square miles of Indian territory to tame by way of 200 deputy marshals and a gallows in Fort Smith the size of a frigate. The two despised each other for reasons unknown to me, but they were united in their contempt for interferers from Washington. "Still, 5 robberies. We can scrape up that many in parts of Montana most seasons. What's our end?" "Method of operations was nearly identical in all 5. That suggests the same band. At the pace they're going, they'll fish out their current waters in short order and relocate. I'd rather we fought them on Texas ground than ours. Innocent bystanders there are spread out more and less likely to take a stray round." That was thin even for him, but I didn't press the point. If he were going to confide the truth to me, he wouldn't have bothered to put up even so transparent a lie. In any case, we were interrupted by the antique steward who'd returned to ask if we wanted more refreshment. To my surprise, the judge nodded, and the Scot took from a cabinet a cut-glass decanter and from another a bottle of Monongahela and mixed their contents in our empty glasses. Blackthorn was a one-drink, one-cigar man by order of his physician who had seen him through a heart attack, and no one who answered to the judge had ever asked for seconds in his presence. Except me, of course, but this was the first time he'd joined me in the rebellion. If the steward noticed that a valuable book from the club's collection had been defaced, his expression didn't show it, and he left without remark. Membership was restricted to owners of ranches exclusively, but although Blackthorn held no title to a single square inch of real property, an exception had been made in his case because he'd tried and convicted rustlers with such Old Testament fervor that not so much as a stolen pair of horns had crossed the territorial line in more than a year. It stood to reason that until one did, he could scribble dirty pictures all over the walls of the reception room on ladies' night without a mark appearing against his name in the register. He closed the atlas and slid it over the arm of his chair until it leaned against the side. For a few moments, I watched him shifting his weight on the cushions in search of a compromise between his bony angles and the arrangement of horsehair in the upholstery. The only seat that really suited him was the one behind the high bench in the courthouse. Just because he was physically restless, however, didn't mean he wasn't complacent in his mind. He knew I would raise the subject sooner or later. I took a long draught of the gavel and gave him his way. The Bible. I take solace from it often. The beauty of the Song of Solomon stands out against its background of war, plague, and human sacrifice. I was reminded of it when Whispering Hope swept through town last year. I was trying a case of rape, murder, and dismemberment, and the strains came through the window as an eyewitness was testifying. I was comforted by the reflection that ugliness and beauty, hell and redemption, if you will, have abided side by side on earth since the beginning. All the changes are superficial. I wonder if the Israelites gathered in the courtyard of the palace to predict Judgment Day the way our street philosophers do on Catholic Hill. If so, and Solomon's father David was in charge, he'd have stuck them in the front lines and given them the first look. So some of the word remained with you after all. Not enough to get me from the Kingdom of Israel to the panhandle of Texas. He ran a finger around the top of his glass, drawing a dull hum from the crystal. He made some kind of decision and set it on his chairside table untouched. Each of those robberies took place within 3 days' ride of Owen, a former buffalo hunting center more lately concerned with sheep herding, with all the complications that represents with the local cattle interests. Full-time brigand is passing out of fashion. Increased numbers of law enforcement officers and the Pinkerton stranglehold has forced many road agents into the cover of legitimate employment. Jesse James and the Youngers scorned the life of the working ranch hand, but most of the later breed has come out of line shacks and the bunkhouse and fly back into them between raids. My theory is you're more likely to find these highwaymen rounding up strays in Palo Duro Canyon than hiding out in some cave planning their next outrage. The challenge, of course, is to penetrate that close society without raising the alarm, sending them into flight or open confrontation with their loyal friends at their side. A band of officers would bring about the former, and a single man poking about would almost certainly end up bleaching his bones somewhere on the staked plain. However, there is one profession that thrives on a healthy knowledge of the lives of the members of his community without arousing suspicion and without prowling beyond his station and the various tables where he's invited to break bread. I saw where he was heading then and felt a nasty grin splitting my face. I can stand for a cowhand because I've been one, and they took me for a saloon keeper down in New Mexico because I know my way around a bar. But the first time I thump a pulpit, they'll smell brimstone clear to Chicago. You fail to appreciate the proposition. Men confide in their barbers, women in their dressmakers, but both sexes trust their ministers. In addition, the many social affairs that surround the church place the pastor in the best possible position to monitor gossip. No one knows his community better than the man who serves its spiritual needs. Get Terhorst. His wife teaches Sunday school, and that sheep face of his belongs at the Last Supper. I considered him first, but he thought the plan profane. He threatened to resign. Whereas my soul's up for grabs. The star draws fire like a bottle on a fence rail, but I put it on when you ask. I won't reverse my collar for you. I never met a man struck by lightning who was decent company after we got past the obvious. He smiled then, close-lipped, without the teeth he wore only in the courtroom. I felt certain once I scratched that infidel's hide I'd find a believer. You're too hard on yourself, Paige. You have an ecclesiastical mien when you discuss a subject that arouses your passion. The rest is costuming. That was when I knew I was beaten, although I argued my case a few more minutes just to make the conversation as disagreeable for him as it was for me. When Judge Blackthorne addressed me by my given name, there was no slack left in the leash. Chapter 2. I asked how long I'd be in seminary. He said I was leaving for Texas in 2 weeks. I stared. That's barely time to get through Genesis. Once again, you undervalue your abilities, and you know I regard false modesty a mortal sin. I've seen you plow through a thick field report without pausing to lick your thumb. Genesis is only 66 pages in the standard King James edition, and the whole thing's shorter than Ben-Hur by 260. But then Lew Wallace always was prone to wander. How did you know that? Every schoolboy knows he got lost on the way to Shiloh, leading to huge Union losses. It was a great victory for the Army when he turned toward literature. I mean, how did you know the number of pages in King James? I've met men who can recite it front to back who couldn't tell you that. As can I. As can a magpie with as much comprehension of the spirit behind the words. Annexed to that, in my case, a talent for figures. He tugged out his fine platinum watch, engraved with his name by President Polk for distinguished service during the war with Mexico. I assume a medal had come with it, but the watch and the bullet-chewed tricolor flag that hung on the wall of his chambers were the only souvenirs he displayed from that episode. I know, for example, that of this moment you have 11,344 minutes to make yourself intimate with the Book of Books before your train leaves. I caution you to use them all. There are Texans who can barely write their names but who will drag you through cactus if you overlook a comma in Ezekiel. Again, a feat of exhibition rather than of faith. That panhandle country is undiverting and made to order for scholarly study. There's more to being a minister than reading and regurgitating verses. You haven't told me my denomination. The vacancy you're filling was left by a Unitarian, which is the nearest thing established doctrine offers to religion a la carte. We'll go one step further from popery and make you an evangelist. That way there will be no truck with arcane ceremony and personal strictures. You're free to take strong drink and fornicate, although I advise more than usual discretion in both pursuits. You're aware of L.A. del Fugo? La Ley de la Fuga. The law of flight applies only to fleeing suspects. It's a license to slaughter. I sense error in both constructions, but I keep forgetting your season in New Mexico. It's been many years since I laid siege to Montezuma. The ends of his mustache turned down steeply. He hated to be caught in a mistake in the midst of a dissertation, and had found more than one attorney in contempt for correcting him in court. The interpretation of the law becomes broader the farther one travels west or south of the more populous settlements. Your discovery alighting from the back porch of a married rancher upon his return home would not overstretch its spirit. Letter is another matter, but by the time a judgment was reached, it would be unlikely to do you any material good. I can be killed for that here, and spend my last night in my own bed. Not yours, to be technical, but the point is moot in any case, since you're making the journey. Texas is the only state that retains the privilege of secession, and some of the natives behave as if it's exercised it already. They're savages in silk hats. I know Texas, or most of it. That's why I came back to Montana. Riding herd, no doubt, upon its indigenous unchewable bovines. He tapped the arm of his chair with the edge of the watch as if it were his gavel. A pulpit is not a saddle. You'll require a tutor for the public parts, as well as in the niceties of the rectory and parlor. I'm fresh out of suggestions. I don't know any of the ministers in town, and I'm not sure they'd take kindly to a stranger asking them how to defraud a flock of the faithful. I know an Episcopalian who'd shoot you as like as not with the pistol he uses to protect the sacramental wine. But I'd not send you out cold, even in Helena, on so delicate a mission. You'll want Eldred Griffin. Father Griffin, though I'd sound him out before I employed the title. I'm not certain if the custom of addressing ex officios as president or governor extends to the clergy, and this fellow may take it amiss, whatever the protocol. He rang for the steward and asked for envelopes and writing paper. The man withdrew, taking with him the big atlas which he had retrieved without asking. A veiled reference, I thought, to the judge's desecration of its contents. A Catholic priest? I asked. Defrocked. Distasteful term. One pictures a bishop tearing off the man's vestments in the churchyard and stomping his chalice flat. I hope he's not a colorful old character. I draw them like flies. You'll have no difficulty on that account. He's not many years older than you, and according to the Reverend Clay of the Presbyterian Church, he suffers from chronic melancholia. Mr. Webster defines black as the absence of color. The steward returned with a sheaf of foolscap and some envelopes. Blackthorne took two of each, sent him away with the rest, and shook ink into the business end of his pen. Using the table at his elbow, he spent some minutes writing, signed both pages in his elaborate hand, waved them dry, folded them into envelopes, and addressed each. He tucked in the flaps and held them out. The first will introduce you to Griffin. Don't lose the second. It's for the captain of the Texas Rangers in Wichita Falls, who will prepare you for what to expect in Owen. I know I can trust you not to steal a look at them. I opened each of the envelopes in turn and read the letters while he seethed. They were headed by the name of the Helena Stockmen's Association in half-tone letters and a steel-point engraving of the club's brick headquarters. I refolded them and put them back, tapping the Texas-bound envelope with a finger. Judge Blackthorne's epistle to the Texicans? You try my patience, deputy. Did you think they contained instructions to assassinate you? Anytime someone says he can trust me, it means I can't trust him. What are the odds the thought never crossed your mind? It's crossing it now. Am I really one of the most reliable officers in the federal system? That depends on the area in which one relies upon you. Captain Jordan has slain 16 men in the line of duty, whereas I'm told former Father Griffin is drawn to straight talk with no embroidery. For those reasons, you may get along with both. Then again, you may not, for the very same reasons. I still receive letters from the White House in response to calls for your extradition to Canada on behalf of the Northwest Mounted Police. It doesn't sound like this Captain Jordan wastes much time writing letters. I slid the envelopes into my inside breast pocket, next to the underarm rig I wore in town. Were I you, I would cosset him at every opportunity. The Rangers are known for recruiting their officers on the basis of results rather than strict conformity to the rule of law. Cosset Jordan. Talk turkey with Griffin. So long as I don't mix them up, I can't go wrong. Blackthorn smiled. I preferred it when he wore his teeth. I asked where I could find Griffin. In the Catholic cemetery. Every time I returned to Helena, it seemed, more brick buildings had been erected to replace frame structures built on the same sites. This was because the city burned down every few years, and fireproofing is more effective than re-educating residents in the proper use of flame. One day, the whole place would be brick, like Chicago, and it would be time for me to move on, because there's no room in civilization for a fellow with bark left on him. The Cathedral of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary was one of the oldest local landmarks constructed of that sturdy material, and had sheltered many refugees from blazes under its spiky-crowned bell tower. I climbed Catholic Hill and discovered something new since I was there last, a large structure, brick, of course, risen in place of the wooden boarding school of St. Vincent's Academy, where the nuns of the order taught children their letters as well as numbers. It had burned or been torn down and replaced, but Sacred Hearts still dominated the hill. I swore they'd done the work during my brief visit to Oregon, but then a lot more time had passed since I'd been near that church or any other. I didn't even know for sure what faith I'd fallen out of. My father never told me just who he prayed to when he set his trapline in Blackfoot Country, and my mother had kept her old gods to herself. I would be a challenge to instruct. My knuckles hurt just thinking about it. Farther down the street, inside a grill fence topped with iron fleur-de-lis, slumber the Catholic settlers of Last Chance Gulch, along with others of the same persuasion, under crosses and tablets and the odd bugling angel. But cemetery populations are continually expanding without attrition, and a larger lot had been purchased on the edge of town to accommodate later arrivals and marble vaults for the well-heeled. Even old graves need tending, however, and vandals and thieves with spades need to be discouraged. A dwelling had been built for caretakers and their families on the last plot of unturned earth, some said atop the bones of forgotten pioneers whose wooden markers had burned or been carried away. It was a doll's house, really, designed along the lines of the stately mansions of the suddenly rich on Benton Avenue and Lawrence Street, but scaled down to proportions more appropriate to its humble tenants. It was the same mansard roof, the same mullioned panes in Roman arches, the same gracious wraparound porch, but 12 paces would take you from the front door into the backyard, and even from the outside you could tell that a man not much taller than myself would have to duck when he climbed the stairs to the second story, and I am not tall. I worked the bell pull and took off my hat when the door opened, as I would have upon entering a place of worship. The man who opened it was in his middle 40s, my height. I wonder if he had been hired for his slight stature to preserve the plaster ceilings. And to my observation, the owner of the only other shaven male chin and upper lip west of Pennsylvania. His cheeks were high ovals, his hair cut short and black without gray, and his eyes were that pale shade of blue that photographers have to touch up on the glass plate to keep them from reproducing dead white. He wore neither coat nor collar, but with his black waistcoat buttoned and white shirt fastened to the throat, he appeared fitted out to preach the gospel in any church I'd ever entered. Father Griffin? Eldred Griffin. He had a low, even voice that never strayed above or below a straight line, or so I thought then. It had a quality of a chant. Your page, Murdoch. He touched a pocket in his waistcoat. I'd sent him Judge Blackthorne's letter by way of a messenger with a note of my own, but I hadn't expected him to keep either on his person. The way he touched it made me think of an amulet to ward off, well, me. I showed him the simple six-pointed star. Am I interrupting anything? Only my retirement. I pocketed the star and took out his response. You invited me here. He glanced at it without interest.
It isn't my hand.
Eldred, you know very well it's mine.
This was a new voice. He half-turned from the doorway, giving me a straight shot across the shallow entryway at a small woman standing framed in an arch leading to the rest of the house. Her hair, brown with streamers of gray, was skinned back and fastened behind her head, and her face was round, without a single feature that called attention to itself. She wore a dark brown dress, nearly black, and plain to the point of pride. A placket concealed the buttons. An egg-shaped stone the color of slate in an old-fashioned setting showed on the index finger of her right hand, folded over its mate at her waist. It was her only ornament. Griffin didn't forget his manners.
My wife, Esther. Paige Murdoch.
My hat was already off, so all I could do was incline my head. I had the impression she was older than her husband. Her gaze acknowledged my gesture, then went to him.
How often have you said you wanted to pass on what you know? She asked. I thought it an opportunity to learn whether you have the gift.
You might have discussed it with me before you acted.
Oh, Eldred, when have you ever discussed anything with anyone? If I hadn't acted, you would still be clipping weeds 10 years from now.
It's honest labor.
Not if it's not what God intended.
He speaks to you, whereas with me he is silent.
Mr. Murdoch did not come here to listen to us quarrel. Invite him in.
You know what he wants. To pose as a man of the cloth in order to catch a rogue. Sin for sin, and I am to be his accomplice. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words.
The integrity of the upright shall guide them, she said.
But the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them.
Should I be taking notes? I asked. Chapter 3.
In which faith were you raised? Griffin asked.
Christianity, I said. I'm pretty sure.
I meant which church?
I was born 6,000 feet up in the Bitterroots. I never saw a church until I was almost grown. His pale eyes clouded.
Your parents were savages?
Only my father. My mother was some part Indian.
Which tribe?
Nez Perce, I think.
You don't know?
I wasn't encouraged to ask questions.
And so, with those qualifications, you chose to enter law enforcement?
No one chooses that. I just sort of drifted into it after the buffalo ran out. In between, I punched cows and shot wolves in the winter for the bounty, but I made too thorough a job of it. When wolves got scarce, I became a drunk for a while and got to know a few jails. In one of them, the sheriff turned out to be an old bunkmate. He told me the U.S. Marshal was hiring here in Helena. It was the only work I could get where my recent history didn't count against me.
And how long have you been about it?
10 years last April. Felons don't seem to run dry like buffalo and wolves and whiskey.
A fortunate turn for the citizenry. Road agentry is the only calling you haven't answered.
I disagree. The frontier keeps changing. There's always a paying position that didn't exist last week. What did you do before you became a priest?
I was an altar boy.
We were seated in a pair of split-bottom chairs in a room he called his study. A dim cell at the top of a flight of stairs you practically had to crawl up on hands and knees to keep from cracking your skull on the square timber across the top. One wall slanted with the roof, and the rest were a jumble of books stuck in at every angle between 2-inch-thick pine shelves. More books and loose papers climbed corners to the low-papered ceiling. A lamp with a blackened chimney smoked on a small writing table near his chair, stinging my eyes while illuminating little but itself. The room smelled of coal oil and moldy bindings. One queer thing I'd noticed. None of the rooms I'd passed through on the way there contained a visible religious symbol of any kind. The study was no exception. I'd never been in a Catholic household that didn't display a large crucifix or a picture of Jesus somewhere prominent. He returned to my origins. He would be one of those biblical scholars who cut Methuselah in half to count the rings. The Nez Perce are an intelligent people, large cranial capacity. I taught them at the St. Ignatius Mission when I was in seminary. You favor them in the jaw, in the forehead, not so much. My father came from Aberdeen. He used to smash stoneware jugs with his head to win bets. You must have been proud. Grateful for the inheritance. I've stopped more than my share of pistol butts, and I can still walk a straight line. You and I are not of the same flesh, he said. I cannot think of any other circumstances that would place us both in one room. He leaned forward as if to rise. I'm not going to help you. The only reason I didn't turn you away at the door is I'd never be quit of it as long as Esther is around to remind me. As if in response to her name, his wife knocked and entered, carrying a brass lamp and a silver tea set on a tray. She was the only one of us who didn't have to lower her head to clear the doorway. She set the tray on a squat, square footstool stacked with volumes. There wasn't a bare horizontal space in the room, but this one at least was level. Traded lamps and blew out the one that had been fouling the air. The room brightened immediately. I don't know that it had entirely to do with a clear chimney and a well-trimmed wick. She poured for us both. I don't like tea, but when she'd mentioned brewing it, I'd assented because I wanted her present for what I did then. I fished a leather poke from my side pocket and placed it on the tray where the pot had stood. It clanked. I'm authorized by the United States District Court for the Territory of Montana to offer you $100 in gold for divinity lessons, I said. Judge Blackthorne advised me to pay half in advance and the rest upon completion. I'm putting it all on the table. The risk of flight in your case seems small. It used to be 30 pieces of silver. The treasury must be in good condition.
Eldred, the man is our guest.
I said, it's more than twice what I earn in a month, but we're asking for a season's instruction in 2 weeks. The object of betrayal is a gang of highwaymen, not Jesus. You're overlooking the rest of the congregation who will come to you in search of guidance. Have ye not spoken a lying divination? He broke off with a sidelong glance at his wife. It occurred to me that her knowledge of the Bible ran deeper than his. I seemed to have stumbled into an old argument.
It won't be a lie if you teach him the proper words.
A profane man profanes holy words merely by speaking them.
The sword of God is not so brittle, she said, and Mr. Matthews has refused to extend us any more credit at the meat market.
I'd gambled right. It was the men who were winning the West, but it was the women who kept the books. Griffin sat back a fraction of an inch, fixing me with his pale eyes. Were you baptized? I've been up to my chin in the Canadian and all the way under in the Yellowstone. I almost drowned that time. He looked at Esther. Are you not yet convinced whom he represents? Must he sprout horns and hooves?
The Prince of Lies is not so clumsy, or we would not fear him.
She turned to me with the teapot in one hand and a full cup and saucer in the other.
Have you really never been christened in the faith?
I shook my head. There's the end of it, Griffin said. Tell Matthews I'll eat potatoes and miss purgatory.
Don't be theatrical. You hate potatoes. The solution is simple.
Mr. Murdoch will submit to be baptized, and we shall ask him to join us at supper tomorrow night after his lesson. Pork chops, I think. She handed me the cup and saucer, gave the other to her husband, and set down the pot, scooping the sack of coins from its path, and putting it in the pocket of her plain apron, all in the same movement. Then she lifted the tray and left. For a moment, the only sound in the room was me blowing on my tea. I looked across at him. I don't suppose you'd care to do the honors.
It wouldn't be sanctified. I'm no longer a priest.
I'll ask Reverend Clay, then. The crease between his brows deepened. It had looked like a scar to begin with.
The Presbyterian?
I'm posing as an evangelist. How good does it have to be?
Mother of God, he crossed himself. Is there a sacred thing you don't hold in scorn?
I like the idea of the Good Samaritan. As for the rest, no one died for my sins. I wasn't born yet.
By which I take you to mean you've invented some of your own.
I'd be guilty of vanity if I said I had. I confess I've broken a commandment or two in order to keep others.
Do not use the word confess in my presence. The common belief is priests are unworldly and therefore unschooled in the wickedness of man. Those who subscribe to the theory have never sat in the darkness listening to a parishioner gloat over the details of unspeakable evil under the pretense of absolution. Nearing the end, I became convinced that no number of Hail Marys would spare them the pit. Meanwhile, I retired to the rectory each evening bearing their burden as well as my own.
Is that why you left the priesthood?
He sipped tea, drawing it in with a sucking noise like a horse drinking water, and set his cup in its saucer with a click. It seemed to place a full stop to the conversation. No doubt you think that having chosen evangelism, you've avoided the intolerable yoke of dogmatic principle. What the informed laity lacks in formal training, it more than makes up for in passion. Have you ever attended a tent meeting?
No.
There is always one about every Sunday in mild weather. You and I will attend the next. What do you intend to wear on this southwestern sojourn?
I ran a thumb under the left lapel of my coat. He shook his head slowly. I said,
Not black enough? Not humble enough. A made-to-order suit on a minister's back means a hand in the collection plate. I can't find a fit in a ready-made that has room for this.
I spread the coat to show him the Dean Adams in its suspender scabbard. The skin of his face drew taut.
A righteous man arms himself with righteousness only.
I consulted Samson and David on the matter. They came to a different conclusion.
Do not seek to banter with me in Holy Writ. I will bury you, and we haven't time for it. You must not carry a pistol into a house of God.
The last time I was in one, I didn't see a gun check at the door. I'm going to Texas to break up a gang. If I save a soul, it's in the line of a collateral benefit. I've heard stories of pocket Bibles stopping bullets, but I don't credit them. Bandits carry heavy calibers as a rule. He started to drink again, but his hand shook. He set cup and saucer on the writing table.
At least promise me you won't brandish it in church.
I could, but it'd be a lie. They build churches and saloons from the same green wood, and there are men who'd as soon bust a cap in a convent as in a brothel. I won't make a point of the business without good cause, I can swear to that much. That's why I need a coat that won't show a bulge.
Pick one off the shelf a size too large. No. Two sizes. The more shapeless, the better. Bundle it in your bedroll, and when you reach your destination, don't be too conscientious about brushing and pressing.
You can't preach convincingly about a camel passing through the eye of a needle if you look as if you'd get stuck yourself. Should I let out my whiskers and chew a plug? Assuredly not. You must be clean in your habits and appearance. Does it not sting your professional pride when you encounter a slovenly peace officer? I've trusted my life to a few, but I understand. A bad lawman paints us all. I'll pack a razor and look to my nails. Clean them, don't pare them. And under no circumstances allow a barber to shave you. 15 cents for a haircut is as much as most ministers can afford, and they will forego a meal to avoid becoming shaggy. Fortunately, sustenance will not be a problem. Most parishioners consider having even a mediocre minister to their homes for dinner the same as purchasing an indulgence. He touched his flat belly. Mind you, don't be taken in by the conventional belief that all country wives are superb cooks. You'd be wise to carry a sack of peppermints in your pocket to settle your stomach. I didn't realize the work was so dangerous. Nothing like a smile crossed his features. Many men, out here in particular, make the mistake of confusing a cassock with a skirt. They have no concept of the level of courage required to walk the path of the lamb in a den of lions. Any fool can muster the strength to face a mortal enemy. Only one man in 1,000 can find it within him to turn his back on one. Are you that man? I hesitated for the first time in the discourse. I don't know. An honest answer at last. Have you a Bible?
I own one. I didn't bring it. It seemed like carrying firewood to the forest.
Bring it with you next time. It will save passing the text back and forth.
He turned in his chair and lifted a volume the size of a traveling desk off the pile of books on his writing table, one-handed. His hands were slim and white, but as strong as a harvester's, opened it in his lap and hooked on a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles from a waistcoat pocket. And so began the catechism. Chapter 4. I returned to my furnished room past midnight, limp as a bar rag. 100 voices were shouting Bible passages in my head. Sunday school with Eldred Griffin was like digging post holes all day in the desert, and I'd done that, too. By gray dawn, I was back in his study. He looked as fresh as I felt stale, wearing a clean collarless shirt with his waistcoat and trousers brushed and creased in the right places. He had no one to impress with his poverty. And a shine on his elastic-sided boots, round-heeled though they were. That day began as did the next 4, with the same question, "Are you baptized yet?" My answers varied.
"Not in the last 6 hours.
I haven't had the chance.
Reverend Clay went shooting.
I'm catching a cold.
I forgot."
On each occasion, he made no comment, snapping open his Leviathan Bible and directing me to turn to the passage before him in mine. He'd marked his place with a piece of razor strop scraped thin as flannel. My copy was bound in supple leather for traveling, with all the gold leaf worn off the outside lettering and its dog-eared pages rubbed nearly transparent at the edges, like a marked deck of cards. It had been left to me by Dad Miller, a deputy marshal who'd taught me 2/3 of what I knew about the hunting of men, including a posthumous lesson. Place the same faith in your friends as you do in your enemies. He'd had his throat cut while on watch by a member of his own posse. Each day we interrupted our labors for breakfast, noon dinner, and supper. Esther Griffin was a good, simple cook who skimped a bit on salt and pepper, but kept vinegar in a cruet on the table for my use. Neither she nor her husband touched it.
We ate meat on two evenings and crackles every morning, so I concluded that she had made peace with the butcher. We spread lard on slabs of coarse bread and washed everything down with chicory coffee and water, which she drew from a well uphill of the cemetery. She baked bread twice that first week, and on Saturday a peach pie made from preserves sent to her by a sister in Michigan whom she hadn't seen in 7 years. I gathered that although she belonged to a large family, this sister was the only member who stayed in touch. I assumed the break had something to do with Griffin's having quit the priesthood, but later I learned I was wrong. Anyway, the pie was good if the crust was a little doughy. She blamed the wood stove, which listed toward the corner where a stack of bricks had been inserted in place of a broken leg. Conversation at table centered around food, and if it weren't for the preserves, I'd never have found out about the sister and Esther's estrangement from the rest of her people. Griffin never failed to thank her for cooking, and he always pronounced the grace. "Never defer this duty to anyone else when you're a guest," he told me the first time I joined them. "Your hosts will be too polite to refuse, but they'll resent you for it. The reason for having you over is to gain a place at God's table, and if you don't put in a good word, their chances are no better than even." "Is there anything else I should know?" "Eat with your fingers if they eat with theirs. But if they're too self-conscious to pick up a chicken leg in your presence, use a knife and fork. Don't let anyone see you pluck stray hairs from your food, and come prepared with plenty of fresh gossip."
"Isn't that violating some kind of oath?"
"The seal of the confessional doesn't extend to what you overhear in ordinary discourse and doesn't exist at all outside the Roman Catholic Church. You must sing for your supper, especially if you want to hear what else is taking place among the congregation. The more garrulous the minister, the less laconic the host. That is the reason for this charade, is it not?"
"Still, it steers pretty close to bearing false witness." He frowned at the bit of potato on his fork. It was the only vegetable I ever saw him eat, and he seldom did so without showing distaste. If it weren't for that, I think he'd have come down with scurvy long before.
"That raises another point. Never sermonize beneath another man's roof. He works 6 days a week only to be told on Sunday morning he is going to hell. He won't tolerate it in the afternoon."
"More cabbage?" Esther offered me the bowl. I gained weight during that period, something I rarely did. Gluttony has never been one of my sins. I was used to bolting a steak in a saloon or a bowl of rabbit stew at a stage stop in order to keep from fainting and falling out of the saddle. Sweets and savory seldom slowed me down when there was light out and miles to make. However, the ordeal upstairs made me ravenous. I think Esther Griffin enjoyed serving something other than bread and meat to someone other than herself, and took special care in the preparation. When she brought out the pie, she surprised Griffin by pouring a glass of cold milk for me from an earthenware pitcher.
"I traded Mrs. Nordstrom 3 eggs for a quart from her Maybell," she said.
She kept chickens in a little pan out back. Griffin asked how she'd kept it cold.
"In the well, where else? You won't have an icebox in the house."
"Certainly not, with the market only 300 yards away. The amount those pirates in the ice house demand for water and cold, God's own bounty will revisit them at end of days."
He was as pinchpenny as any country preacher.
"It's very good."
"I have a weakness for cold milk," Griffin said. "I suppose this means no eggs with our fat back tomorrow morning."
"It means hotcakes. I saved 2. His mood lightened then, and he spent several minutes in praise of Esther's hotcakes.
"Don't bore the man, Eldred. He'll find out tomorrow whether they taste like sunshine or black midnight."
He stopped talking and resumed eating.
He touched on human whenever his wife was in the room. The rest of the time, he was a slot machine that paid out in scripture. The sixth day of my training was Sunday. I came expecting a short lesson, as surely Griffin still attended morning services, and when he opened the door wearing a coat and hat, I began to hope for a holiday. The coat was rusty and appropriately rumpled, and stove blacking had been applied to the kettle-shaped crown of his hat where the nap had worn off. He had on a stiff gutta-percha collar and a green cravat. When he asked about baptism, that's when I told him I'd forgotten. "Come with me." He bustled me out the door and drew it shut behind him. "Where are we going?" "Where every non-heathen goes on Sunday."
"What about Mrs. Griffin?"
"She never attends church." That surprised me more than when he'd told me there was no mention of apples in Genesis. I didn't even think to ask if it meant he'd married a heathen. He'd hired a buggy and a shaggy gray. He left the whip in its socket and steered with the lines and short whistles. I'd suspected he avoided Sacred Hearts for reasons of his past, but when we left behind two Protestant churches, I got curious. Genuine wonder set in when we crossed the city limits and took the road that led to the Rockies. In the foothills, where frost tipped the blades of grass like candle wax, we topped a low-swelling rise, Griffin using the whip now to keep us from